Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Hey, y'all. Welcome back to part three here on the Thursday, May 26, 2022 edition on the Chase Thomas podcast. Fellow University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green comes on this portion of the podcast, The Full Ride with Matt Green, here on the Thursday show, the Chase Thomas podcast, where, guess what? Yeah, I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, coming to you live from Knoxville, Tennessee. Matt and I talk about all things college football on this very podcast. A lot to talk about since the last week that we joked about, of just the content never ceasing on this front. So Matt and I were able to talk about Nick and Jimbo. We were talking about the NIL drama, Alabama landing Eli Holstein, Devin Leary at NC State, a lot of good stuff on the CBS Game of the Week TV schedule and picking those games for the 2022 cycle and where that's going to go and which games are going to get the 330 spot, as we only have a couple more years of these. So that was a lot of fun. And then, of course, the Big Ten title betting odds, Ohio State heavy favorites going into 2022. But who else makes sense? Nebraska, really high up. That's interesting. So we talk about all that and more on part three here on the Thursday, May 26th edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. So thank you for checking out and checking out part three and just the podcast in general over on the Blue Wire Pod Network. Greatly appreciate it. Make sure you go check it out on YouTube, youtube.com, type in the Chase Thomas podcast. You'll find us there. Like and subscribe to our videos. That would be great. You can email the program at chasethomaspodcast@gmail.com. Tweet at me at @chase_thomas and like the Facebook page at facebook.com/chasethomaswriter. All right, Uncle Darren, let's go.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
We're back here on The Full Ride with fellow University of North Georgia alumni Matt Green, taping this late on a Wednesday. Matt Green got a chair where he can just prop up his AJC Georgia Bulldogs or National Champs 2022 edition. Matt Green, how are you, sir?
Yes, sir. I'm doing well, sir. For the listeners out there and for those not looking, they can't see quite that closely in the background. It says champs right there on the headline. Yeah. AJC, like you said, just got it framed. You know, that's a temporary spot. I'm not just going to leave it in a stool. You know, I'm going to hang it up on a wall somewhere. But just framed it up, and I figured it was a great addition to the pod.
How is Tori with, like, sports decorations and stuff? Does she, or, like, just in decorations at all? Does she give you a lot of leeway in what, how much sports stuff you can throw around the house?
She's, I got some leeway for sure, because she's not, like, a decorator at heart.
Okay.
So she's just like, I'm like, you want to put something here or whatever? And she's like, yeah, I don't really want to put a Georgia G there. And she's like, you have any other ideas? Well, I don't really have any other ideas. So we got a, I got a replica football helmet that's going to be on display at some point. So we'll see what we can do with that. I don't know how prominent in the house I can get it displayed, but we'll see.
Georgia helmet, I assume.
Oh, for sure.
Okay. Is it signed or anything?
No, it's not signed. I was just like, I just need to get a helmet. Like, I just need to have that. Throw a visor on there or something, you know? Really swag it out.
I mean, if I can get in touch with the right people at the University of Miami, get that Willis McGahee helmet with the visor, that would be, whew. It's hard to beat.
Man. Pull some Brennan. Strings. McGahee, that was one of my favorites, at the all-time favorites at the time.
McGahee or Brennan?
McGahee. Yeah. I was all about Willis McGahee, Clinton Portis, just Miami, that era, Edgerrin James. It was just everyone who came out of there. And then Frank Gore ends up with more rushing yards than everybody. So
well,
almost more rushing yards than anyone in NFL history. It's insane.
But it's just, he just kept playing. It's one of those things where he's never once been one of the five best running backs in football. That's literally never been a case for him. Shout out to him.
I'd say he had maybe a 2 or 3 years where he was top five. He was good. He had a brief, a very small window where he was like elite. But yeah, I know what you're saying.
I would never qualify Frank Gore as an elite running back in the NFL, but he was good. Like, he was just solid. Like, Frank Gore was just solid in an era where running backs just, Todd Gurley is done and was cooked at 26. Frank Gore is out here just, he's still playing ball while his own son is playing college ball. That's how insane that is. His son's out here putting on the pads, strapping the pads up in Hattiesburg, Mississippi, killing it for Southern Miss, and his dad's still grinding it out in the NFL. Like, there was a chance people will get obsessed with the LeBron and Bronny James connection in the NBA at some point. No. We got very, very close to Frank Gore playing football with his son. That would have been
incredible. Just Googling Frank Gore real quick. You need to pay this man some respect, all right?
Oh, no.
Year two, 1,695 yards and 8 touchdowns.
But go through that year. No, hold on.
That's elite right there.
That was back when other running backs were doing that kind of thing. What was
2006.
2006 rushing
leaders. But 1,695, I guarantee you, that's top two or three in the league.
So, LT...
But he had two other Steven
Jackson. Hold on. He's number 9 that year.
1,695? There's no way.
That's attempts. Okay. He was ninth in attempts. Yards, he was third. Oh, he was basically tied with Tiki Barber and Steven Jackson.
So there you go. That is 1 year. But other than that, you got like an 1,100-yard, 10 touchdowns.
But LT had 1,800 that year and 28 touchdowns.
Well, he's not LT. I mean,
but that's my point. Is
that's
there
like short list, like GOAT, though.
But what I'm saying is LT didn't last as long, but LT's like peak. What I'm saying is like the peak was just...
Tomlinson had a pretty long career, too, though. He probably had like an 8-year peak or something. Like, he was elite for a while.
He was elite for a while, but then you have LJ, who still, like, he disappeared. Larry Johnson, who was really, really good for...
He was definitely a flash in the pan kind of guy, for sure.
That's what I'm saying, but at least the flash in the pans were that for a year, where you're like, this might be the best running back in football. Never once did we have the conversation, is Frank Gore the best running back in the NFL? That never happened. That conversation never happened.
I mean, that's kind of like how Emmitt Smith was, though, too. Like, he was better than Frank Gore. But, like, Barry Sanders was the best in the league, like, always. Like,
yeah.
Barry Sanders was always better than him. And then you had, I don't know, Jerome Bettis had his time. Like, I'm trying to remember who all
Garrison
was
Hurst.
Great in the 90s. You know, Emmitt Smith was better than – he was definitely very good.
Mm-hmm.
But he just – part of his thing was longevity, too. Like, Jim Brown and Barry Sanders play, I don't know, 3 or 4 more years. Like, Emmitt Smith's not touching their yards. Like, he
yeah. –
Like Barry Sanders came in the league after, left like several years before, and then he finally broke his record. So like, I don't know. Emmitt Smith's great, but he's kind of on that longevity. Like Hank Aaron too. Like he's kind of in that.
Whoa.
Like Hank Aaron was just really good every year.
Yeah.
He never hit 50 home runs, is what I'm saying, though. Like, he never had a 50 home run season.
Right.
He was just hitting 40 home runs every year till he was like 40 years old. Like, true. So it was a longevity thing, too. Like a one-time MVP, I think, mm-hmm. you know, that sort of thing. No disrespect to Hammer
I was
Hank,
like, oh
right?
my
He's
goodness.
The legend, for sure. But it's that's kind of the longevity. Ooh. It goes into a lot of those guys that set the all-time records. They get untouchable when it's like a Kareem or a LeBron that has the longevity and the all-time greatness. Like, I don't know how anyone's going to touch whatever records LeBron ends up putting up.
I can't believe we started this by you just throwing Hammer and Hank under the bus here and just throwing him in the same conversation with Frank Gore. You're going to have to explain that to the sports gods at one point in your life, Matt Green.
In different capacities. There's context in there.
I'm throwing out the context. Folks, you heard it. Frank Gore is basically Hank Aaron. That's what I heard from Matt Green on this podcast. That's just what a night. That's how you know we're recording later.
Frank Gore is more, I don't know what, Jim Tomei? Is that a better argument?
Jim Tomei, maybe like a Pat Burrell? No.
Jim Tomei's a Hall of Famer.
Frank Gore's not a Hall of Famer.
He's like top five in rushing all time. He's definitely a Hall of Famer.
No, you don't get in the Hall of Fame. Nope.
You got to. Nope. You got to.
Nope.
The longevity, at a certain point, that like you become, it's like a second act. Like you start to get respect just because you're still good at that age.
Does Milton get respect for coming to work every day when he lost his job and looking for a stapler? Like his job got terminated and he kept coming to work. Like are we giving like Hall of Fame plaques to people that just who just showed up for a really long time? It's like that's like one of those, if we put him in the Hall of Fame, it's kind of like, and look.
Hey, you're going Milton over here. I'm going Keanu Reeves, Hardball. That's like, what is it, like 90% is just showing up. You just got to show up. Frank Gore just kept showing up to like year 20.
This is like those kids. I feel like you were this kid. This would explain a lot. Did you have the perfect attendance every year growing up?
No, I wasn't a perfect attendance.
Even
guy.
In elementary and middle school?
I mean, I don't think so. I remember my parents took me out of school one time to go to a Braves game. So
okay,
like, I remember we saw the Killer Bees. I was a huge Biggio fan back in the day.
Okay,
but yeah. So I mean, miss a day of school. Like, what's one day of school here and there?
That's true. Well, the reason I was throwing that out there is because it's like those people who my mom would always get onto this, where it's like, oh, great. This award is like, thank you for making my kids sick award, because no kid just goes 300 or just goes however many school days without being sick. And if you have perfect attendance, that means you sent your kid to school sick at least one occasion and got everybody else sick. But that's kind of it. It's like, yeah,
possibly.
Great. You were here every day. Great.
It's like bragging about not using your sick days. It's
yeah.
Like, cool, man. You should probably use those.
Frank Gore, you maybe should have tried harder in year four to really get to that 2,000-yard mark.
And hey, you don't question Frank Gore's work ethic, all right, sir? Playing in the NFL till 37, this guy...
As a running back.
For sure. 1,000-yard, last 1,000-yard season was what? At age 33?
But look at his yards per carry that year. It was something... It was what? 3 yards a carry? Let me see
yeah,
that year.
Yeah, 3.9.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, he was fine. Frank Gore was a fine running back for a really long time. And no shots fired at Frank Gore. I don't know the man.
16,000 yards, man. 16,000 yards. It's a lot of yards.
He was never an elite running back in this league. He never was.
No, that's true. It's the Hall of Fame. It's a tricky thing.
Oh, my goodness. I can't do this. We're not going to talk Frank Gore.
So, hold on. Before we leave it. So, like, is Todd Gurley... have a better case for the Hall of Fame than Frank Gore?
I think he needed a couple more years. He's like so extreme on the short career spectrum that he's not.
But if
he got like 2 to 3 more years, I think he's in.
Because if you look at like Terrell Davis,
yeah,
he was like first ballot or something. He might not have been first ballot. But everyone's like no doubter Hall of Famer. Mm-hmm. It's like Terrell Davis had like 4 good years, maybe. Mm-hmm. But he won 2 Super Bowls, so like there's no question the MVP and everything. Like Gurley was like maybe runner up for MVP that 1 year monster year he had, and then his one of his best years was when they just, like, whatever happened to him in the postseason, I guess his knees started breaking down then.
Yes.
Like, he just started, never got the ball that postseason when they went to the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
But he actually was that level of, like, best running back in the league for maybe 3-4 years, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And Frank Gore, it's like he's just been a really good running back for 12, 13 years, just on a roster for 17 years. Like,
but Gurley was, like, the best player, just a different – like, Derrick Henry now is the equivalent now where it's just, like, this is preposterous. But it's not going to keep going. Like, Derrick Henry's not going to be doing this at 31 years old. Like, this kind of – maybe I'm wrong. Henry is built like
never
a
know.
Tank, and he's fun to watch. But we'll see. We'll see, Matt Green. I knew you were going to find a way to bring Georgia into that conversation.
No, Gurley was just the one we referenced earlier. So that's like kind of a benchmark because complete opposite careers.
Yeah. Well, let's talk some Jimbo and Saban. Remember how I joked last week that I hesitate doing these pods because I just feel like college football every day, whatever we talk about that night is like going to be thrown out the window because they're going to do something crazy. And then Nick Saban... his statements at the Birmingham thing come out, and then Jimbo schedules the press conference for Thursday morning. It's been a week now, Matt Green, since the public kerfuffle between Jimbo and Nick. Where are you at with Jimbo and Nick at this point?
Oh man, I feel like they just both sound like just whiny babies, honestly. First of all, I understand Jimbo getting, like, you know, keep me out of your mouth kind of thing, you know? Mm. Like, so I understand Jimbo getting, like, pissed after Saban said what he said. But the initial signing day press conference where Jimbo gets defensive and it's like, NIL had nothing to do with it. That's what I'll never understand. It's
right.
Like, it obviously had something to do with it. It's
advantageous.
Part of the formula. Just like your academics or your coaching staff or your facilities, NIL, it's part of the piece of the pie. That it's part of what they're – the reason every guy is looking at every school. So you can just – you don't have – you can – whatever you say, it's taking credit away from how hard your staff worked or whatever. But it obviously had something to do with it, a greater than zero percentage. And you're not breaking the rules. So I don't know why you got defensive to begin with. And then Saban just kind of sounds, I mean, on one hand, he sounds whiny. But on the other hand, I feel like everything Saban does is for a reason. So I feel like he's really, especially in that setting, like he's saying, like, this is what A&M did to sign the number one class. You guys do want to sign the number one class, right? Like,
yeah.
Yeah, okay, then this is what it's going to take. You guys have to start throwing a bunch of money around like A&M is throwing around.
Mm.
You do want to express yourself, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's probably where Saban was really coming from. And then, I don't know, to call the emergency press conference afterwards, it just...
He woke up mad. That's what's wild, is he had a chance to sleep on it, because you know he was fuming that whole night. But that man woke up angrier than he was the night before. Do you know how hard that is? Like, you get a good night's sleep and you're like, I'll sleep it off. I'll sleep the anger off. I'll just calm down in the morning and I'll be fine. He's like, nope, press conference, first thing, we're doing this, and I'm gonna use the word despicable 18 times.
The name calling.
Yes.
That's,
and I think I just
wild.
I think say I don't you know what's funny is I was talking to Connor Gara of Saturday Down South about this, and where I'm at with it a week from now is like a lot of people are like, oh, can it be October 8th now? Can it be October 8th? I'm ready for Texas A&M, Bama. And I'm like, I think what a lot of people forget is these dudes are friends. Like, Todd Grantham and Dan Mullen are neighbors, and that, like, all these guys live on Lake Oconee, and all of these SEC coaches spend a lot of time on the golf course together, and, like, a lot of the premier Power 5 coaches know each other and are cool with each other. That this to me feels like something that, I mean, we'll learn a lot next week when they're in the same spot in Destin for the SEC meetings, and we'll see what happens there. But that's a lot of time between now and October where I don't see this animosity festering long term. I think he was mad. He's not taking his calls, whatever. But, like, cooler heads will prevail at some point between these two. Where
he called, like, me. I didn't answer.
Yeah, like, why would... It's just, I don't think, you know who we need? It's just Lane Kiffin, just send him in. Like, send him in as the mediator, where it's like, guys, it's not that serious. Like, y'all are both killing it. Like, y'all are both, like, you're arguing over the number, like, why you have the two best classes this past year. Like, do you see how silly this is that we're all arguing about this publicly? And I think what's interesting, too, is that I think Saban, if he could do it all over again, would take back calling out Texas A&M specifically, because I think he really didn't mean to. If you watch the video and watch the way he's talking to the crowd and what he's saying, he is clearly talking to those leaders that you alluded to, of like, hey, business leaders of Birmingham, the game has changed again, and we've been doing this thing with our collective, or we're having this universal NIL type thing, and they're all making this when they come in, whatever. A&M didn't do that. And A&M doesn't look like they're going to do that and follow that model. They're not going to wait until they're on campus and then get the $1 million College Station Lamborghini NIL deal for Max Johnson. That's not how it's going to go. They're going to get them all in beforehand. And he's just telling them, this is where we're going. It's like when Saban's talking about offensive changes and stuff like that, where he's talking to the business leaders and was using A&M as a way to rev up those business leaders to be like, hey, you've got to open up the pocketbooks a little bit more going forward because I need your help. Like, we're now competing with Texas oil money. Like, really, like, we're competing in a different way on this front. And if you want me to get the number one classes again, then guess what? Like, the game's changed. Like, that's just the reality. And I don't think he was like disgusted by it. I think he was really not trying to throw shade at Jimbo for it. I really don't. I think he was just saying that's what they did. And Jimbo getting so defensive about him saying that they bought his entire class, that I understand, because he shouldn't have used that word. He should have said they used NIL in a very strong, like, he could have phrased it differently to not make it seem like he was taking a shot. He misspoke there, I think. But what he, like, Jimbo could have taken that as, like you said, where, hey, we have this great NIL collective. We have this great situation in College Station. If you're a recruit, you're a five-star, come on down. You, like, this is a great opportunity for you to come to school, make some good money, and play for a premier program in the best conference in America. Like, those are all things you should be embracing in the new era of college football. And instead, I think, and this is something that Connor mentioned, I thought this was fascinating, is that Jimbo's mind and a lot of these coaches' minds still aren't there. So they're thinking bought as a negative, because it was a negative that insinuated cheating before this. Now that's NIL, it's not cheating. Like, that's just that what he's saying is, this is Saban saying it's not cheating anymore. This is what you did. That's fine. We're not complaining, but that's not cheating anymore. And Jimbo is like, I don't cheat. Go look under Nick Saban's hood. Do you think he's blah, 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 blah?
And it's like, yeah, right. Like, just take it to a whole nother level.
Right.
Yeah. I think you definitely made some good points. I think, at the end of the day, it's not against the rules anymore. So yeah. If he mentions Jimbo Fisher by name, like, a reporter is going to reach out to Jimbo Fisher at some point very soon. Like, hey, Nick Saban just said this. Do you have anything to say about it? And then you can comment. But to call a whole press conference, it's like the whole doth protest too much, right? It's just like, why are you getting so defensive if you didn't do anything wrong? Like, you got another coach. You got the greatest coach of all time running the best program in college football talking about you. You're probably doing something right. And just keep on doing what you're doing. So it feels really insecure for him to feel the need to call an emergency press conference. Like, legit, like, what time did he hear about that? Like, we got off here at, like, 10:30, I think.
Yes.
It's like, it happened at, like, midnight. So it's like, was he already asleep, woke up at 6 a.m. and heard about it?
No, they woke him up that night. There's no way. People woke him up that night.
Yeah, so it's like, just, it's insane to me. Like, if you didn't do anything wrong, like, what are you calling the press conference for?
Well, it's also like, and I think people miss this with NIL, and this is something that I think people need to understand, is like, Georgia's going to use it, A&M, Tennessee, all these different programs, premier programs, and they're going to throw shots of like, oh, they only got this player because they had NIL. That's not reality. So reality is, like, USC, if they still have Clay Helton and they're throwing the same kind of money at Caleb Williams or same kind of NIL deal, they're not coming. Like, those guys are not coming. it's part of the like whole package where, hey, I'm going to be utilized because every Lincoln Riley quarterback goes in the first round of the NFL draft. Like, I know with this offense and what I can do in this situation, it's great weather and all that kind of stuff. That's cool. But the coaching staff matters. The recruiting department matters. And I think that was what Jimbo was also kind of upset about, is that Saban kind of downplayed that part of it, where it's like Walter Nolan did not pick A&M just because of that. Like, none of those premier defensive players picked A&M solely for an
maybe.
Who knows? Like, you had, look at their defensive line this past year, and look at what Mike Elko built in Aggieland, and look at Miles Garrett.
Really good defense.
Yeah, Miles Garrett went number one. You've had the body of work where it's like you could set, like, every coaching staff shows these recruits how they're going to be used and how they're going to get them to get paid at the next level and how they're going to turn them into an NFL superstar. Like, that is part of it. They're showing the scheme, and like, they're showing, like, there's a lot more that goes into recruiting than just, hey, we don't have a recruiting department, we're just going to hire this collective to take care of all the conversation with these kids. It's just not reality. Like, the vast majority of the work is the relationships between the coaching staff and the recruiting department and those kids. So I understand that part getting defensive too, but I just would not have called a press conference about any of this. I just wouldn't have gone that nuclear in response.
Yeah, without a doubt. I'm right there with you. If we're getting, you know, professional wrestling on this, he promoted the hell out of this 2022 matchup, though. Definitely going to get a primetime slot now.
For sure. We'll end on this with this. So ESPN's Pete Thamel, really good ESPN college football reporter, he had this when he wrote a really good editorial after it all happened. He said, quote, "These entire shenanigans emphasize how impotent the NCAA is and has been." One veteran assistant coach told ESPN on Thursday afternoon, quote, "It's like two cartels pointing their fingers at each other." That is the best summation of what happened there I'd seen to this point, where it's just, I mean, that's really what they are at this point. Like, if you're a premier college football program, it's kind of like this whole conglomerate, the too big to fail. Like, there's just a lot of moving parts. No one really knows what's legal, what's not, what's working. It's just like, it's just powerful, and you better get out of the way.
College football is a drug for many, so I can see the parallels.
Speaking of Alabama, so this is another just college football doesn't sleep. Eli Holstein, he commits to Alabama. Four-star quarterback, one of the top quarterbacks in the 2023 class, was originally committed to Texas A&M, and he flips to Alabama this week. Of all weeks, what do you think, Matt?
I'm reading between the lines on this one, sir. The Arch Manning sweepstakes? Does this, ooh, I mean, this is a top, is he top 50, top 100 prospect, yeah, right here? He's like the eighth-ranked quarterback in the country, I think. Mm. That's a pretty big-time guy for Alabama to go after, for Alabama, Texas, and Georgia being the quote-unquote finalists for Arch Manning. You'd have to think this makes it more of a Georgia-Texas battle at this point.
I felt like it's Georgia and Texas for a while. I mean, I could be wrong. I think it's still Texas in the lead, but if Texas has a down year, I think that changes a lot. Like, Texas, I wonder though too, it's like,
but if Quinn Ewers has a big year, it's like he's a redshirt sophomore, mm-hmm, next year when Arch Manning's a true freshman. Is that the situation when I come in, or you want to come in somewhere like Georgia where there's most likely, if Stetson is the starter all year, there's no incumbent there and you're coming in and competing?
Wait, hold on. Yeah, there is. There's two. There's a five. I mean, well, not an incumbent, but there's a lot of premier talent.
But nobody
talent
that has a starting experience, though. That's true. Like, just the outright starter. Like a Jake Fromm, Justin Fields situation. Like,
true.
Just with how well Fromm played, regardless of who was behind him, he probably wasn't going to get benched, you know? Mm. So you kind of just how it works out sometimes. If Quinn Ewers, like me, if they win the Big 12, if they're like a really good team, he's obviously the guy in 2023. But
I mean, that's it. He's in the NFL.
But then he's got
one more year
and he's in the NFL. So who knows? At this point with the portal, what it is, you might as well go where you want to go to begin with, regardless of the depth chart, and just see what happens. And then, you know, you always got a plan B you can go to without sitting out.
That's true. Another thing that happened that I forgot to add to our show sheet because it's been a week and college football is crazy is Jordan Addison is now a USC Trojan too. man. It was rumored for a while, and people were like, oh, he might end up at Bama. He might end up at Texas, and not just go to the place where he may or may not have been tampered with beforehand. But no, that's where Jordan Addison will be playing football this fall, where USC's roster is just... You got Travis Dye, Oregon running back. You have Caleb Williams, Oklahoma quarterback. You have Jordan Addison, Pittsburgh receiver. Mario Williams, Oklahoma receiver. It's like this whole roster is completely different. We have no context for anything USC for 2022. None.
No, we really don't. It's insane. I wish, this is why I wish we could get these games scheduled like a few months out. Like, mm-hmm. Give me a USC Pitt at this point. I feel like there's some. We got Slovis in Pittsburgh. We got Addison in USC. Like, we got some storylines there.
That would be cool. Well, another cool thing, Devin Leary. So we've joked in this pod that, like, for whatever reason, NC State is just QBU that no one talks about. And there was a really good piece by Nicole Auerbach of The Athletic, really great college football reporter. But she had a really good piece about Devin Leary and why he is the best quarterback no one's talking about yet. Hey, we're talking about on this podcast. We know what they've got cooking in Raleigh. We know what they do. You know how Maryland, they just crab cakes in football? Raleigh, North Carolina, it's quarterbacks in football. That's what Raleigh does. Just quarterbacks all the time. NFL, got you. We got the next one. He's coming in. Not going to, like, we don't
and
have them.
Cigarettes, right? Big cigarette.
Are
people
they?
Down in Raleigh, right? North Carolina and that Tobacco Road, that's what they do down there.
Well, I don't know
if
that makes them cigarettes. That just means
that's where they do all the tobacco stuff. It was
but I think it's going out. I think it's being shipped out.
I went for it, you know, it didn't land. So we keep it moving.
What did you make of this, and what do you make of Devin Leary and the pack going into next year?
Yeah, I thought it was a cool story. Like you said, we've been on the Devin Leary bandwagon for a couple years now. But one thing I took out of this was the trivia. I have a trivia question for you I got from this. I don't know if you remember this part of the article. He was a part of the 35-5 club. 35-plus touchdowns, 5 or less interceptions. Fifth guy since 2010 to do that in college football. Can you name the other 4 guys that have done that? 35-plus touchdowns and 5 or less interceptions since 2010.
Mac Jones?
Mac Jones is one of them. That's correct.
Jake Fromm?
Jake Fromm did not do that, no.
Desmond Ritter?
No.
Since 2010? Zach Wilson?
Incorrect. How many more guesses should I give you?
Give me a couple more.
I'll give you 2 more.
I'm thinking.
One was in 2019, and then 2 of these were in 2014.
Trevor Lawrence?
No, close.
Deshaun Watson.
Further away. Oh. 2019. I'm going to tell you this one. It's going to be Justin Fields.
Oh, I would not have guessed that. I would have guessed he threw more picks than that.
And then back in, I think he was like 38-2 or something.
Was he really?
His first year as a starter. Yeah, something ridiculous. And then Marcus Mariota.
I was going to say an Oregon quarterback. I knew an Oregon quarterback felt right.
And then Cody Kessler.
Oh.
Who?
Cody Kessler.
I'll be honest, I'm kind of blanking on right now.
It sounds familiar. Where did Cody Kessler play?
Where is Cody Kessler? He played in the NFL.
In the Browns. I was going to say the Browns. USC. He was undersized, wasn't he? Was he a short guy?
That's back in 2014. I guess we just weren't remembering USC football at that time. But 39 touchdowns and 5 picks for Cody Kessler that year. Third rounder. Okay. For the Browns. But yeah. So those are the 4 other guys that did it.
Do you know what's funny? I'm looking at Cody Kessler's signing day from high school. He has 3 hats on display here. 2 of them, Pitt and USC. What is this Pitt and USC thing? What is this? Max Brown?
Runs deep.
Do you remember Max Brown, the quarterback at USC? He transferred to Pitt. That was something that
is
happened.
Is that right?
Yes. What is this? Why are they going across the country to these two schools? What is the back and forth?
What is the Pitt-USC connection? I don't know.
We need to make this a rivalry. This needs to be a yearly thing. We need to turn this into the cross-country rivalry. That's wild. I would never have guessed that. Cody Kessler.
Call it the Lynn Swan rivalry.
Oh.
There's a little Pitt-USC connection. Oh, it's Pittsburgh. But,
same field, though.
Same field. But, yeah, I think Devin Leary, I think NC State, I think is sneaky. Like, could be the best team in the ACC this year, for sure. Like,
it's either Miami as, like, the dark, like, they should be going in as, like, this should be their division, and then Clemson if they get the offense right, but we'll wait and see.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of Uyunglele this year. Like, there's nothing to really tell you that he's going to be better. Like, you know, new offensive coordinator, you know, maybe he'll be used differently. Like, you know, who knows with that. But I think NC State is going to be the best team coming out of the Atlantic, as you know.
Right.
And then most likely Miami, maybe Pitt coming out of the coastal.
Speaking of divisions, those are gone, and I think the divisions in the ACC are gone this year, right? Or is it who's getting rid of Pac-12's doing it this year?
Yeah,
ACC's probably next year. But Edgar Thompson of the Orlando Sentinel, who covers the Gators, he was on, and he talked with Scott Strickland, AD over there at Florida. And I think he said that Strickland told, like, in their conversations, that divisions are out for the SEC.
I think it has to be. With a 16-team conference, I just don't think there's any way you can reasonably do divisions. I think I saw someone post this week kind of a schedule, how it would be set up. I think I sent that to you.
He mentioned the three. It's like the three consistent rivalries or the one is basically what the choices are, it seems like. It's either three consistent teams or one. You get one consistent.
What do you mean one consistent?
Like one team you play every year, and then the rest are different in round robin, and then you play eight different, basically.
Okay. See that's okay. So that would be the only reason, because you play 15 other teams.
Yes.
So 7-7-1. Okay. Mm-hmm. See, that would be.
Those are the two options I heard.
I guess that would make sense. That's what you're trying to do if you're trying to not go to a 9-game conference schedule.
Mm-hmm.
Because the SEC has pushed back on the 9-game conference schedule a bunch of times. So
if they don't go to 9-game, it's going to be that one. But if they do go to 9-game, it will be the 3-1, it sounds like.
I think that's probably the most fair, but it's like everyone's schedule is a gauntlet. Like, that 9-game schedule. Like, you just, there's, once you get Texas and Oklahoma, like, assuming, you know, Texas and Oklahoma are what we think the kind of programs are going to be joining the SEC, like,
yeah,
there's no off week hardly in the SEC.
Yeah, we'll see what ultimately happens there, but I do think the college football playoff only consisting of the SEC is not going to happen. That from conversations is not gonna, that threat is just leverage and not gonna be a thing, because that would be horrific if we went down that road. Can you imagine Ohio State?
The only way that's cool is if you just, like, we get Ohio State to join the SEC.
Right.
And then it's like, I guess this is everyone we need down here. I don't know.
That's true. you have your CBS TV schedule ready to go. Are you going to be sad? Like, how many more of these do we have before this Saturday schedule on CBS is gone?
2024, is that the new year, or is it the new once everything goes to ESPN, or is
that's
it
what I was wondering? Yeah,
I can't remember. There's not many left. And people keep talking about the jingle. It's like, they're not gonna take the jingle.
No,
the
jingle
CBS thing. Owns that. Like, they're not, whatever conference, whatever, maybe there would be an all Mountain West conference network at that point. I don't know, but they'll keep that jingle for sure.
God, what are they going to do? It's going to be so weird. Like, we just grew up and associated CBS and, I mean, Vern and Gary and then Nestler and Gary, but it's just that song. I've run to that song on several occasions. Dun, da, 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 da. Like, it's just, you're not going to top it. It's probably the best college football theme song, right? Is there a better one?
Like, it's not. It's iconic for sure. But it's like, if your team's playing a big time game on ESPN primetime, it's like
that's not prime time though. It's 3:30.
No, that's true. But like either way, like you guys are going to get amped for your team playing a big time game on a big time network. You know, it's definitely a part of our childhood. You know, it's kind of like that that NBA on NBC music back in the day. Is that what it was? It was on that Showtime, NBA Showtime, the video game. Yeah, that's where I remember it from the most.
Dun, 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 dun. Yeah.
Sure. Yeah, just like that.
Have you watched that band commercial, the NBC, NBA and NBC band commercial? I don't think it's real, but there's one with the theme song. I'll have to send it to you later. But that was something I grew up. That was an NBC theme song thing. So CBS TV schedule. What have you got for me, Matt Green?
Yes, sir. So, kind of interesting how they, like this, what they'll do every year. Like there's like three or four games, before the year starts that they're like, okay, we know what time these are going to be, like the Notre Dame, Georgia game a few years ago. Like they knew that was gonna be a prime time game. For like 10 years in a row, Alabama LSU, that was automatically a primetime game. Not anymore. And Auburn Alabama, too. That was just like an automatic, that's like going to be a CBS game for sure. It's not one of them this year. So the automatic ones, Georgia Florida, week 9, Penn State at Auburn, week 3, which I've seen people on Twitter complaining, like Texas fans complaining about a 2:30 local kickoff for Penn State Auburn. It's like, it's 3:30 CBS, so this isn't new. What are you talking about? This is, like, yeah, it'd be cool to be a night game, but no, it's a 3:30 CBS game.
The 3:30 slot is better than the night slot. Am I crazy for that?
I agree with you. I'm later in the year, it is better than early in the year because, like, it's not even a night game when it ends. Like, a 3:30 game at the start of September, like, I feel like that's still going to be a day game at 7, 8 o'clock or so, 7:30 or so.
Like Georgia, but Tennessee, when it got dark at, like, by the fourth quarter.
Exactly. Georgia, Florida, like, early third quarter. It's, like, always a night game. So, and then Arkansas, Missouri, that's the other game. It's for that Friday night after Thanksgiving. So those are the only ones they've already established before the year. So I thought we'd dig in and see what are going to be the CBS games so far this year. So in week 4, you got an open week. Arkansas and A&M is that week. And you got Florida-Tennessee. I think early in that year. See, I think early in the year, though, week 4, before they've probably both played anybody, Arkansas-A&M, that could be number 7 versus number 12. Like, that's going to be a really big-time game.
Arkansas has an early. Hold on, who does Arkansas play early? They have someone good early, I feel like, right? Okay, they have Cincinnati to open. That's what I thought. They have Cincinnati to open, but I guess...
So that could be a tough one, but Arkansas could definitely win that game at
home, right? South Carolina too, though.
So, So Arkansas could be... They should be a top 15 team at that point. Florida-Tennessee is big, but I kind of think they'll go Arkansas-A&M on that.
Well, I think it'll depend on Florida and how they do against Utah and
that's true.
Kentucky.
They'll have Utah and Kentucky before that.
So if they're undefeated, I think they're in. I think Florida and Tennessee, if they're both undefeated, I think they go that way.
I think that
draws a bigger audience.
I could see that at Tennessee too. Then week 5, we got Bama at Arkansas. So Arkansas really kind of depends on what kind of start they're off to.
Yeah.
If they beat A&M, that sort of thing, Arkansas could be like 4-0 going to that game. Got Kentucky at Ole Miss could be a sneaky one. And then LSU at Auburn. It's like hard to know. LSU and Auburn is just a classic, but
it feels like a 3:30, but two rebuilding teams this year? I don't know, man.
So Bama at Arkansas. If Arkansas is even like 3-1 coming in,
I would say is the favorite for that.
That's the sexy one, the big time number one team going into the hostile ranked team environment. So that's probably, but Kentucky, Ole Miss, sneaky. Like, I don't know what to expect out of either of those teams. Like,
but if Kentucky beats Florida and they're undefeated, then okay, maybe.
Yeah, they could be a top 12 team or top 15 team at that point. Then go to week 6. This is the first doubleheader. So what I realized, which I don't even know if I just realized this, and it's like this every single year, but the 2 weeks that they have doubleheaders are the only 2 weeks that all 14 teams are playing each other.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So I don't know if it's like that every year, but that's how it is this year. So the two, the first week where everybody is in SEC play, we got the 3:30 and 8 o'clock Alabama at or A&M at Alabama. That's the 8 o'clock game. If it wasn't already, this Jimbo Saban subplot is definitely going to have that be the 8 o'clock game. But then you got to keep in mind how they choose these games, because I think CBS has the first choice of that 8 o'clock game. But ESPN would get like the second pick, and then that 3:30 CBS would be kind of like the third pick. So you have that week, you have Tennessee at LSU, which is like a sexy matchup that you don't get to see very often. But you also have Auburn, Georgia. So Tennessee at LSU might be a better game. So it might get like the 7 o'clock ESPN slot or something like that, where Auburn, Georgia get. You get that B team broadcast with Aaron Murray and who else is on there. So I could see that for Auburn, Georgia.
I would agree with that. That's then, not going to be a game. Like, that's not. Isn't it sad how the mighty have fallen?
Hey, it's Auburn, man. I'm not gonna put anything past them. They could catch lightning in a bottle. Who knows? Week seven, we got Alabama at Tennessee. And I think
that's a lock if both are undefeated.
I think it'll be great for college football and great for the SEC if this game is as big as I've talked about it being, and both these teams are undefeated, and this is college game day. This is definitely your 3:30 CBS spot. But you also have LSU at Florida that week, and then Auburn at Ole Miss. So I would think with those choices right there, I think it's got to be Bama at Tennessee.
Yeah, even if Tennessee has a loss there, I think that's still the better choice.
I think so. I think just when a big time, like top five, top 10 team is going on the road to play a good ranked team.
Yeah.
I just think that's a good environment for like a great game, you know?
Well, last year was at night on ESPN, and the year before that was on CBS at 3:30 when it was last in Knoxville. So.
Okay.
I wonder if that's like a thing. I don't know why they did it like that. Now I want to go back and forth. I'm like, is it always on ESPN when they're in Tuscaloosa and then on CBS when it's in Knoxville? I don't know.
I don't know. And then, the other thing I was thinking, going back to Auburn at Georgia, Georgia's also the reigning national champion.
Yeah.
And they hadn't had a game on CBS probably to that point, so they might just want to get a game at
Georgia. You did that to yourself. You did that to yourself. Look at your schedule. Who wants to watch any of these games on CBS primetime?
We're just talking like the first like 5 weeks. Well, and Oregon is one of the big games.
Yeah, but that's not a 3:30 CBS game though. You don't play Oregon on CBS.
No, of course. Well, they could. I mean,
no, that's SEC. We're talking SEC 3:30.
No, of course. But when the SEC team is the home team and one of these non-conference matchups, they can.
Yeah.
The CBS game sometimes. Like, I know, like, Florida State at Florida has been a CBS game. And
it just doesn't feel right to me. It doesn't feel
right. But no, that's going to be Oregon. That's going to be 3:30 ABC. Before,
is that 3:30, not at night?
Yeah, it's 3:30, and then we got
Ohio State, right?
Ohio State, Notre Dame as the nightcap. So that's going to be an excellent day of college football. September 3rd. Can't get here soon enough.
And you know what's great? Is Tennessee doing these opening on Thursday nights? It frees me up for the day. So I don't have to like be at the stadium and watching Tennessee beat up on Ball State for 3.5 hours.
A Thursday night?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. Thursday night. College football should be played on Thursday night, sir. I told you, like, I boycott football. Like, I inadvertently boycott football on Thursday night. Like,
you'll tune in.
Tennessee, I probably will. College football is different. I was conditioned to watch a low-key interesting college football game on Thursday night. Like, that's all it would be. It's just like a
low-key interesting.
I shouldn't
have done this. I put you down another Thursday night rabbit hole. You're
like
on
Minnesota Ohio
again.
State Thursday, I loved it. But but Bengals Steelers on Thursday night, like I don't even consider watching.
Why are you complaining about more football? I'm okay with it.
I'm just telling you, it's not an active boycott. It's an inadvertent boycott. I'm just like, it doesn't register for me to watch NFL on Thursday. It's just not, I'm a creature of habit. I don't know what to say.
Well, you're thinking about tequila football on Friday night.
that's what it is. I'm probably at the JV game that Thursday.
I think the cops are getting called. Like, if you attend a JV game without a kid there,
I'm just a member of the community, sir. keeping it moving. Week 8 is the total crapshoot week. So we got Ole Miss at LSU that week, Mississippi State at Alabama, and then the one that, depending on how this team could start, if they just catch lightning in a bottle, A&M at South Carolina.
I would say that's the favorite.
See, I just feel like South Carolina could have 3 losses by the time A&M rolls around. Like, if you look at, let me pull up South Carolina's schedule real quick, unless you have it off.
But, I mean, how many, I mean, South Carolina's schedule is worse at the end of the season, if I remember correctly.
See, I know, I mean, Georgia is like week 2 or 3. So, Arkansas at Arkansas is week 2.
Yeah.
Georgia week 3.
But then they get Charlotte, South Carolina State.
Kentucky week 6, though. Like, those are.
They could be 3-2.
I would say 2 toss. Like, they could beat Arkansas and they could beat Kentucky. So I think that's like they have to be like a, what is that? Is that 6 games? They got to be 4-2. I think if they're 4-2, lose to Georgia, lose to Arkansas, and then if they beat Kentucky the week before or something like that, like A&M South Carolina could be an interesting one.
Mm-hmm.
And just like kind of the novelty aspect of it, of like looking for an excuse to go to somewhere like South Carolina, because that don't have a lot of games at South Carolina usually, because they haven't been a good team in recent years, you know? Mm-hmm. So if they're having a good year, I feel like that seems like a candidate.
Mm-hmm. I would agree with that.
But LSU is the ultimate like X factor. Like, I have no idea what to expect with LSU.
I just feel like they want to throw LSU on there anyway. And Kiffin, probably good. I mean, that'll be a fun game. Like, LSU-Ole Miss will probably be the most exciting of those 3 options.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like LSU could easily get off to, a big-time start, and that wouldn't surprise anybody if Brian Kelly just came in and just had this LSU team. Like, we know how much talent LSU has year in and year out.
I think they were on CBS at 3:30 last year in Jackson, or Oxford, excuse me. I think this was the CBS game last year.
Okay. So it's possible.
I couldn't tell you all kinds of important things, but I could tell you what games in 2021 were on CBS and which ones weren't. That's,
hey, you remember the important stuff.
I know.
And then week 9, that's interesting enough. This is Georgia, Florida week 9. I feel like this is always a really weak SEC slate, the week of Georgia, Florida. It seems like there's a lot of bye weeks and like maybe a cupcake thrown in there, like late October. Like this year, there's a lot of good games on the same week as Georgia, Florida. So you have Arkansas, Auburn that week, Kentucky, Tennessee, and Ole Miss, Texas A&M. So you just have a lot of games that could just be a really full slate of like a good noon kickoff, a good 3:30, and a good night game. So that's going to be a good week. And then going to week 10, Georgia getting Florida and Tennessee back-to-back. Like, that's something we've never seen. So yeah. I think Georgia-Tennessee is probably the most interesting game on this slate. But Alabama-LSU is also on this week. So. It's tough to say. Alabama-LSU just feels like the bigger game, but I think in 2022, like week 10, like we could be looking at, potentially a 7-1, a 6-2 Tennessee team at this point, maybe an undefeated Georgia team at this point. So I think that could easily – and if Tennessee, I would say – am I right? Is that the 9th game of the season? Is it – would it be 6-2. Let me 1-2.
Tennessee.
3, 4, 5, 6. Yeah. So Georgia is the 9th game of the season for Tennessee. So yeah, okay. If they're looking at 6-2, who are those losses to? Maybe at LSU, maybe Alabama.
Yeah.
Maybe you lost to Kentucky, or maybe you lost to Florida. Like, those are not going to be. There's going to be 2 respectable losses. If like they're going to be ranked no lower than like 15th. If they're 6-2 at that point, and so.
Well, Pitt's the other wild card, man. Pitt, I just want to beat Pitt on the road before we even get to the other stuff. But, like, that's not going to be a cakewalk at all.
That's a good point. And then you also have Florida, Texas A&M that week. Like, I don't really know what to expect out of Florida, but that's another game that's going to be interesting. Auburn, Mississippi State. Mississippi State's just that ultimate forgotten.
But we know Georgia, Tennessee is going to be the CBS game that week.
Over Alabama, LSU?
I think so. LSU's not going to be good enough.
I don't. Yeah, that's probably. It'll be a more intriguing game probably at the end of the
you
day.
You put Alabama LSU on at night.
But it is at LSU, though. So, I mean, that
Death
always.
Death Valley's better at night.
That's fair. That would probably make it for. But. Yeah, that would probably make it better for the viewing experience for the
like
fan
it just
at
looks
home.
Cooler. Death Valley looks cooler at night.
This would be the I wish they would do the doubleheader this week. Get Georgia yeah. Tennessee at 3:30, Alabama LSU at 8. But
I just hope I'm not freezing my tail off this time. I was dying of frostbite when we were at Tennessee Georgia this past year. It got so cold. And everyone was putting on their black jackets, so some people thought that the stadium flooded.
I think Georgia
with...
fans took over the stadium. I heard
about it. Yeah, Georgia fans, they took over Neyland.
Tennessee
in the fourth
fans
quarter.
Literally switched to being Georgia fans mid-game. That's what happened. That's how bad it got. But week 11, this is the other doubleheader. We got a noon CBS and a 3:30. So looking at this slate, I feel like. Bama at Ole Miss is maybe the most interesting game, but you also have Georgia at Mississippi State, which we kind of talked about, like the high-ranked team going into a hostile environment might be interesting. How many games is Mississippi State really going to have on CBS? So I could see that maybe being like the noon kickoff, or honestly, with how these work though, at the same time, you also have LSU-Arkansas that week, South Carolina-Florida, A&M-Auburn. Like, it's kind of a... Like I said, this is one of the few Missouri plays. Tennessee plays Missouri this week, so it's one of the few weeks where, like I said, that we have a full slate. So I could see Alabama at Ole Miss being the 3:30 game, and then like the second choice being ESPN taking Georgia Mississippi State being like a 7 o'clock ESPN game or something, and then that noon game being I don't know South Carolina Florida or like
is that Mississippi
A&M,
State game
Auburn.
For Georgia. In Starkville or no?
Yeah, it's in Starkville.
Okay.
So I feel like that makes it interesting going into the cowbells at night. Like
Will Rogers did carve you guys up 2 years ago.
That's true. He threw for a lot of yards.
Mm-hmm.
That's which is cool. Yards are cool. If you're Dan Mullen, yards are the name of the game. But you got to score points too. LSU Arkansas
like,
too.
Well, Mississippi State's like one of those where you just have to like. I think they belong on two of those slots. It's just you got to guess right where you don't know which of the 2 weeks that Mississippi State's going to decide to upset and ruin A&M or Arkansas or whoever season because they're going to ruin two seasons or maybe just one. But like there's going to be one we're going to all kick ourselves. We're like this should have been the 3 o'clock game because Mississippi State decided to get in a slugfest with Alabama and just up Will Rogers just won in triple overtime and took down the tide. Like that's gonna happen. We're gonna get the game wrong of which one to put Mississippi State on primetime.
It's definitely possible. They seem to do their best work, you know, in that noon game. They're like, you were doing something until like 2 o'clock. You were watching other games. You're like, hey, you see Mississippi State right now? They're beating Auburn by 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
That sort of thing, but
they were down by like 4 touchdowns against Auburn and had that amazing comeback last year. Do you remember that on the road in Auburn?
That's right.
Yeah. So you never know. Mississippi State's like the biggest wild card, but they're fun TV.
Was
like,
that the game that Bo Nix made the crazy play, the like his wild like where he ran all the way around the broke the tackle and like ran all the way to the other side. He also had the touchdown pass against LSU where he ran all the way over.
I remember that. I remember the LSU one.
There's a couple wild Bo Nix, just playmaker extraordinaire.
Well, you might be seeing him week one.
Yeah, he's...
We don't know, though. That's still like an up
one thing we do know is that you know, regardless of how much pressure George gets, he's not going to get sacked. Bo Nix, no one gets away and throws the ball away better than Bo Nix. It's his gift.
Mm-hmm.
But week 12, this is what we hate to see, the cupcake week.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, I think a lot of teams are getting – I should have gone through the schedule and seen how many – I think there's only like 5 or 6 teams in the SEC that actually have the November cupcake this year. But unfortunately, they're still on the schedule. So
does Tennessee? I feel like we do.
Tennessee, do they have – No, they don't. They do not have. I mean, they have Vanderbilt the last.
Yeah,
week, but no, they do not have. They have. Oh, they have Tennessee Martin and
That's what I thought.
October 22nd.
Okay.
So it's the same concept. Like play that game in early September. Let's get it out of the way.
No, hold on. To be fair, planning a wedding this fall, Matt, and I've circled some dates that I'm okay with and some that I'm not for Tennessee's schedule.
Mm.
And an October 22nd UT Martin game is kind of clutch. I'm not going to lie. It's been clutch and it has been used thus far in booking dates.
Hey, also, if you would like me to be at your wedding, you know, October 22nd is also Georgia's bye week, you know.
So oh.
Doesn't hurt, you know.
Look at you angling for an invite. Yeah, look at you.
But yeah, so week 12, unfortunately, we still got some cupcakes on the schedule. Georgia at Kentucky seems like probably the best game on this slate. You also have Ole Miss at Arkansas. Tennessee at South Carolina could potentially be interesting. And then Florida at Vanderbilt. The rest of them, we got, you know, Western Kentucky and Austin Peay and the New Mexico States of the bunch. Also, you know, Florida gets a lot of flack, for lack of a better term, for never going outside of the state of Florida, not playing anyone at a conference. I think in the future schedules, you're going to see, you know, a little bit, because they are going home and home with Utah. I think they have a few other ones, maybe Colorado. I want to say there's someone in the ACC. Can't remember off the top of my head, but Missouri. No one talks about Missouri. Scheduling absolutely nobody out of conference. Like, every single year. Last year they scheduled Boston College. Coach
Dude, throws
some
a bowl
shade.
Game. They're
Trinko
trying to make a
throws
bowl
some
game.
Shade at Boston College, and they lose. Like, they don't play anybody at a conference every year. Like, they play Toledo, and they play... I know. I hope we don't have big Toledo listeners on the pod. They're like the first random team I bring up all the time. But New Mexico State is who they have. Like, this year, just looking at their schedule in 2022, if I can pull it up quickly, Louisiana Tech. They do have Kansas State at Kansas State week two this year. ACU, who's that? Abilene Christian? Is that...
I feel like they were good at basketball. ACU's? They made it a tournament appearance. Sounds right. Is that the one where they got pulled?
The only reason I know Abilene Christian is they were always the first. If you could create a player on Madden, they were the very first school.
I think that was the alphabetically the very first school. I could be wrong, but I think they were the school that got pillaged by Western Kentucky staff with Bailey Zappi and company to recreate that school in Western Kentucky from this past year. I could be wrong. It's one of those small Texas schools, and I can't remember which one it was.
But yeah, Louisiana Tech, Abilene Christian, New Mexico State, and this year they actually have Kansas State. There's many years they don't have another Power 5 school.
Dude, they're trying to go bowling, man. They're trying to go bowling.
Like, I'm gonna bet money that they're going to lose at Kansas State week two. You don't just go into the Little Apple and expect to walk away with a victory. So into the Bill Snyder Family Stadium, I think it's called.
Yeah. I think it's Bill Snyder Memorial, isn't it? Or no?
I think family. I think the word family is
in there.
It can't
be Memorial because he's still kicking, man. Shout out to Bill Snyder. I don't think you can do
that. God rest his soul. Him and Wade Boggs. but yeah, so I think that week, Ole Miss, Arkansas, like just... Depending on what happens in the season, like that could be a really interesting game. I think by week 12, we could be looking at some 3 or 4 lost teams and might not be as interesting. But Georgia, Kentucky, that could be like a 2018 rematch for Kentucky when they really were that game decided the SEC East. So we don't know what to expect from Kentucky. They're definitely a dark horse for some people this year. I do not understand the Will Levis first round pick hype. Like, no shade thrown at Will Levis. I just don't see it. Like, I don't know.
He lost Liam Cohen. It's Rich Scangarello, former QB coach in San Francisco. I don't know, man. We'll see. I've heard this story before. Shout out to Mr. Woodson and company. I don't know. When I see a Kentucky quarterback go first round again, I'll be surprised. But we'll see. I don't know. People are really buying
it. Andre Woodson go? He was like third
round or fourth,
or something,
yeah.
Right?
Mm.
I was a big Andre Woodson fan. I would have taken him in the first round. But, you know, I'm not an NFL GM, and I wouldn't be after I took Andre Woodson.
I was going to say, that would not have worked out well for you.
But you know, big fan of his back in the day. Him and Stevie Johnson.
Mm-hmm. He worked out.
Yeah, for sure. His hands just failed him. Week 13. Week 13, final week of the season, were all the rivalry games. So a few games we got off the slate, Saturday 3:30 contention. So we got the Egg Bowl. We got on Thanksgiving Day. Mm. So love that. They don't have a time for that one yet, but I'm assuming a night game.
Yeah.
And then on that Friday, we got 3:30 Missouri and Arkansas, which I feel like this is becoming a solid tradition of this 3:30 on this Friday. This border war. I'm a way bigger fan of this rivalry now that they have this trophy. Arkansas is winning me over with all their trophies.
Well, it gives Missouri somebody because they lost Kansas and they lost all their tradition. Right? So at least Arkansas feels like a start of a new tradition that makes sense.
They're like, guys, you know, I know you had your border war thing going on with somebody else, but you got a southern border too.
Yeah, and they're like, yeah, well, the other border never wins football games, so, like, this is not going to be as fun.
For sure. And then also on that Friday, we got Florida State, 7:30. So that's going to be a great doubleheader for that Friday after Thanksgiving. So really the only option, I think, here is Auburn at Alabama or LSU at Texas A&M. I think those are – and I think just for tradition purposes, you probably put – the Iron Bowl at 3:30. I mean, just who knows? But it's like the only other options it really even could be, like Georgia Tech at Georgia. But that's not going to be a CBS game.
That game shouldn't even be televised anymore.
Louisville at Kentucky isn't going to be a CBS. But like South Carolina, Clemson, I think because it's at Clemson, I don't even think they can put it on CBS. Hmm. You know what I mean? So
I mean, they're not. Like, why are we pretending? They're putting the Iron Bowl on at 3:30 on CBS. That's The Iron Bowl is happening.
But LSU A&M. I mean, that could be a very interesting game in the third.
It's not the Iron Bowl, Matt. Why are we overthinking the Iron Bowl? They're putting that at 3:30. Like Auburn could be 0-10 going 0-11. They're still putting on there. It's like Auburn. Could they upset Alabama and get their first win of the year?
It's fair. The worse they are, the better they seem to play Alabama.
Exactly.
So. You never know. That's probably not true, actually.
We're just relating it to last year.
Because I think they basically beat them every time. I think Nick Saban, what's that stat? Nick Saban has never beaten a 9-win Auburn team.
Hmm.
So literally every time they're good, they beat Alabama. And
that's funny.
No other times. But yeah, so that's the schedule. And then the SC Championship, 4 o'clock on December. Was that on December 1st? Is that? I don't know. It's not important.
I was going to say, I don't have to book those dates.
You don't have to worry about that. December 3rd, it'll be the SEC Championship. And maybe we'll see Alabama-Georgia SEC Championship part 3? Is that be the third Kirby versus Saban SEC Championship?
I think A&M-Georgia would be more interesting.
They played twice in the SEC Championship and twice in the National Championship. And then once in Tuscaloosa.
The dream scenario from an impartial observer would be Sam Pittman versus Kirby in an SEC title game.
Real changing of the guard.
Yeah, I would like that.
Yeah, that would be real good. You would rather have that than the hype train?
No, I'm saying impartial. I just gave you my impartial, where it's if Tennessee's not involved, I think Kirby versus Pittman and Arkansas trying to get over the hump and back in the conference title game. I think it'd be a fun storyline.
I think the best storyline is got to be Jimbo, A&M versus Georgia. I think SC Championship. That would probably be – because then it's like these are the two that feel like they could actually take the SEC from Alabama, right? Like Arkansas, you might have had your year, but you're not – you know, we all just discount Arkansas, right?
Well, we know what the most fun game is. Like if you're the SEC, the game you want is Tennessee-Ole Miss. Like Kiffin versus Heupel and Kiffin, like that in the dome part two. Absolutely. That's must see television.
Ole Miss is I have no idea what to expect from Ole Miss this year. Like, I feel like they're going to be fun, but I feel like they're going to be fun. Maybe more like 2020 Ole Miss was fun instead of 2021, where they kind of, there's a little more substance to it. Like the defense could make some plays. Like 2020, it was just get torched and we'll put up a bunch of points and hopefully we can score more. Like I don't know. They have a feeling of a team that's going to be like struggling to get bowl eligible in November.
I mean, we'll see.
I don't know.
They added so much talent in the portal, man.
That's true.
I don't know. I think it might take some time for them to get acclimated and get all these guys on the same page, but they brought in so much talent. The SMU running back, they brought in Zach Evans, Jackson Dart.
Somebody's
got to
lose
Robinson.
These games.
I know, but I still think it's Ole Miss. I still think it's probably Miss State, and I think it's LSU, and I think it's Auburn.
Yeah, Auburn's going to lose a lot.
Yeah.
But, yeah, with A&M, and I think Arkansas should be good this year. Like, I don't know.
I think Arkansas and Ole Miss are battling it out for Tier 2.
Yeah, that could be true. And that one was an early one, I think. I don't know. I'd have to look at it again. I don't know where I wrote that one down. But Ole Miss, Arkansas, yeah, I'm curious to see how both those teams shake out.
There you go. Matt, we'll end on this. Every week we're going to check out the betting odds for the conference champions. And last week we did the SEC. This week we're doing the Big Ten. No surprise to any that Ohio State is an overwhelming favorite to win this conference this year.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, it feels like this conference is always Ohio State and everybody else, but it feels more like Ohio State and everybody else this year. Like,
they're -225. -225. The next closest is Michigan +900, Wisconsin +1400. The one that caught my eye was Nebraska having better title odds than Penn State and Iowa and Michigan State. Michigan State's way down here at +3000, which is pretty wild to me.
Yeah, that Michigan State at +3000 was definitely the one that caught my eye. And then I started thinking about it. It's like, well, it's kind of like we've talked about with the SEC East and SEC West. It's like, Tennessee probably has a better chance than a lot of the people in the West just because they have a better shot of coming out of the East kind of thing. So I get why Nebraska and Wisconsin and Iowa and Purdue all would have better chances than the Michigan State, but I'm confused how Nebraska is so close to the top of that list. Like,
people like Nebraska, man. They were the best 3-9 team in football last year.
Best 3-9 of all time.
Yes. You bring in Casey Thompson in the portal. You replace Adrian Martinez. You bring in Mark Whipple, the OC, who unlocked Kenny Pickett at Pitt this past year. I don't know. There's a lot of reasons for optimism with the Black Shirts, and they're in the right division. That's part of Michigan State's problem, is they're in the wrong division. And Nebraska has a pretty, like, they have a good path where they end the season with Iowa. That's their new rival. And then they have Wisconsin. Like, they beat Wisconsin, they can go into that Iowa game, like, with the Big Ten conference game right there on the line. I don't know. I could see it. Nebraska being that high up, I'm buying the Nebraska Kool-Aid. I am buying the Kool-Aid, Matt Green.
That's fair. They do have at Michigan, at Iowa. There's at Purdue. I think Purdue is the one when I look at all these teams, like, because, like you said, like, it's so Ohio State versus the field.
Yeah.
But so if I'm going to pick anyone else, it's going to be from a team from the West. And Purdue, like, looking at their schedule, like, they get Penn State at home to open the season on a Thursday night. Mm. Like, that's the best team they play from the East. Like, who else is in the East? Indiana, they have the final week of the season, and they go at Maryland. Like, those are the worst teams in the Big Ten East. They play basically nobody at a conference, like Syracuse, Florida Atlantic. Like, I don't know how good Purdue is going to be, but, and then if you look at them, they're playing at Wisconsin. Like, that's definitely the toughest game, but they get a lot of these tougher games at home. Mm. So, including Nebraska, including Iowa. So, I think Purdue is kind of, if I'm taking a long shot on somebody, I kind of like Purdue. Although it's surprising to see them at worse odds or at better odds than Iowa. Because Iowa, you just kind of know what to expect at Iowa.
Well, it depends on Spencer Petras, and I don't know, the uncertainty there, and he's competing with Alex Padilla for that starter job, but they lose your guy Goodson, North Gwinnett legend, but I don't know. Iowa's offense was just so bad last year that we'll have to see if that offense figures it out. And have they ever gone back-to-back conference title games in the Big Ten?
They have not. I was actually going to ask you some trivia about who has made the most conference title games
in the Big Ten.
In the Big Ten since its inception in 2011.
So am I just starting like what order?
Two teams are tied for six apiece.
Oh, Ohio State, Wisconsin.
That is correct. And then one team's got three, and then two more teams have two.
Northwestern, do they have three or two?
They have two.
Okay. Iowa's got two, right?
Iowa's got two, yeah, this past year. And then one of the early ones, Michigan State. The year Michigan State,
that's right, because the – yeah, okay.
Oh, shoot, I blew that.
What? Yeah.
I said one of the answers.
Yeah, Michigan State. But I had to think about it. I was like, I know Penn State. It's just kind of weird that Penn State's just never been involved in any of this.
Yeah, they have their one. And then, Iowa. Yeah, so Michigan State's the one that's been to three Big Ten championships. And then Michigan, Nebraska, and Penn State have all been to one. And I guess all of those teams have won one except for Iowa, Northwestern, and Nebraska.
Mm-hmm.
So it feels like Ohio State just dominates the conference, but there is a little more parity than we might give the Big Ten credit for. But lots of times it feels like it's just Ohio State not taking care of business, right?
Yeah.
It's just they inexplicably just lose to someone they shouldn't lose to.
Don't throw your money on this game or on this conference. Don't throw your money on anybody other than the Buckeyes. Like you're throwing money away. This is one of the more wrapped up conferences to me. I would be absolutely floored if this Ohio State team did not win the Big Ten this year. It would absolutely.
If you have to put $100 of your own money on this, who are you going?
Ohio State.
See, I'm a risk taker. I'm gonna take Purdue for that big payout.
Their best receiver got ruled academically ineligible.
No, I'm just joking. I would definitely take Ohio State. But, you got to look at those odds.
The payout is Wisconsin. Like, that's the payout. Like, the safest one is, like, a Wisconsin-type deal. Death taxes
that's,
Wisconsin winning 10-plus games.
That's probably true. But Wisconsin's not going to win the Big Ten.
Yeah. Maybe Penn State if you're all in on year 19 of Sean Clifford.
That's probably the best value, honestly, plus 1,700. They have an actual chance, but they're – like we said, this is C.J. Stroud. This is Ohio State.
And
State's
I love
conference.
What we've moved on from Michigan. That's a blip. But it's like if J.J. McCarthy's awesome, then like
it definitely
they did
feels
just
like
beat Ohio State.
They did. It feels like a blip. It felt like the stars aligned for that year. Like, I mean, the offense wasn't very good. So like
– they lost both
coordinators. There's room for improvement. Like, yeah, there's room for improvement. So it's not like if you were just an incredible team the entire season and you still couldn't win the national championship, then, you know, maybe it's not meant to be. But there is definitely room for improvement. Like, that Michigan team wasn't just so good they could never recreate that. I do wonder about how talented they were defensively. Like, you're not going to see many Michigan teams are that talented defensively, but yeah, we do definitely write Michigan off, but I don't know. I think it's partly because it seemed fluky, but it's partly just because Ohio State just seems that good.
Now I want to pull something up. Hold on. I'm going to pull this up with Michigan. I was looking. Hold on. Where'd it go? Let's see. I'm going to find them. Hold on. Dead air. Where'd it go? Because it was kind of wild. It caught me off guard, like, how low they were. Penn State was 90th in scoring offense this past year.
Wow.
Michigan, oh.
Makes sense.
They were 16th. But what were they in? Where is it? Was it this where they were? Where it popped off the page to me? Oh, yeah. True or false? Michigan had a worse passing offense than... than Troy, Duke, and Auburn last year.
I'm going to say true.
It is true.
Wow. I mean, McNamara threw what, like 12 touchdowns? Like, I mean, that's why I start to
I
say
I see 21
like,
touchdowns, 9 picks.
For McNamara?
I guess it's everybody involved.
That's
got to
be the team, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I was thinking McNamara didn't throw a lot of picks. I was thinking I would have said like a 12-2 kind of.
Yeah.
Kind of a stat line for him.
I'm looking at their quarterback rating. Their quarterback rating was 48th. Not an elite offense. They were not humming. The Western Kentucky numbers are hilarious. Okay.
15-6 is what he was.
Okay. Full season. So McCarthy had to be the other ones.
I guess he did throw a couple picks in that Orange Bowl game. Mm-hmm. That kind of hurt that stat line.
We don't talk about that. Western Kentucky, did you see this? 63 TDs and 12 picks for Bailey Zappe last year.
Yeah, he was absurd. Like, where did he end up going?
The Pats.
Tom Brady? Yeah. 2.0?
Oh, you won't get this, though. There's no way you get this. All right.
Okay.
The top two teams in yards per attempt passing-wise. We'll end on this. Here's some trivia for you. The top two teams in yards per attempt through the air this past season was who?
Coastal Carolina.
Very close. Coastal was 3 at 10.7 yards per attempt.
And I bet Georgia was up there too, right? Like 4th or 5th?
They're 6th.
Okay. I don't know. Who you got?
Hold on. I got you. Hold on.
Is it Tennessee? Air Force. Okay.
Air Force number 2, but number 1.
Is it someone that attempted like 65 passes on the season?
Close. The Army Black Knights, number 1. Shout out to our guy Jeff Monken. 11.2 yards per attempt. They threw the ball 110 times. Completed 54% of their passes. Air Force completed 48% of their passes. 11 total TDs for Army, 8 through the air. There were 8 passing touchdowns. The Air Force played more games than they threw touchdowns.
Wow. That's go big or go home, I guess.
They're
hitting for big plays.
Yeah, I love it. Go big or go home, the Armed Forces. Shout out to them.
Shout out to Johnny Tsunami as well.
We should always shout out that reference. John. Yeah. I was about to say Soul Skaters, but that's a Brink reference.
Brink. Now that's a classic right there.
What did they say? Boyo. He said Boyo to his grandson, but I thought they had urchins.
They did have some kind of little like surfer thing.
But they had
can't remember what they said.
We're too old. I don't remember what
I just remember was. Go big or go home. That's the extent of my Johnny Tsunami. And I remember his uncle.
Yes.
Was the guy that was like the bad guy from Mortal Kombat. Yes. And I just couldn't unsee that. It's like that dude was scary as hell in Mortal Kombat. And it's like, this guy's just some chill surfer, bro. I can't unsee you as I don't even remember what his name was. I remember Goro was the one that had the four arms.
Yeah.
But he was like Goro's master. I don't even know what that guy's role was, but he was scary.
Matt Green, your soul is mine. No.
Classic.
I saw the new one in theaters with the fiance last year. I remember it was entertaining. Matt Green. Yeah.
I think I went to two separate Halloweens as a kid. Once a Scorpion and another time a Sub-Zero. So big Mortal Kombat guy.
I was a big Power Rangers guy. I was like a lot of different Power Rangers.
I did go as a Power Ranger one time as well.
That was my jam. I was a diehard Power Ranger guy. Coming home from school and watching that every 3:30. And that and then Big Bad Beetleborgs back to back. It was the only way I could unwind.
Beetleborgs.
It was an icon. Some iconic theme songs. Big Bad Beetleborgs, and it's morphin' time. Matt Green,
forgot about Beetleborgs. That's a really, really. You got the obscure references for sure.
It's not going anywhere, Matt Green. I tell people, I'm like, my brain's full. Like, I just have so much useless crap floating around in here that like, I never know when I'm going to use it. I never thought I'd bring up Big Bad Beetleborgs on this podcast.
I did randomly see Street Sharks the other day. Mm. You remember Street Sharks?
Yeah.
That was an obscure...
they were cool.
But also, this guy's name was Shang Tsung in Mortal Kombat. So I see his name written, and I don't think that character is in the video game. So I think he was just a movie character. I think that's why I don't remember him. Like Kano or Johnny Cage or one of these guys.
Interesting. Yeah, I don't remember. I never played those games really growing up. I was more like I just did Crash Bandicoot, and I played a lot of like computer games. So like my time was like I spent a bunch of time on Roller Coaster Tycoon. Loved Roller Coaster Tycoon. Built a lot of badass theme parks that I'll never see again. All that work in the lab cooking up some dope theme parks, just gone forever.
Every time you make a good one, it gets too extreme for the people, though. That's what always frustrated me about it.
It was so addicting, though, building the perfect theme park and all that. And then
Mortal Kombat was the Sega Genesis era, I feel like. And after that, then after PlayStation, like the Crash Bandicoot.
Yeah, I had that Spyro. Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
And then I just started playing sports games after that. So.
True. And then Backyard Baseball, though. That was the other one. I played a lot of Backyard Baseball. Pablo Sanchez is a legend. We stan Pablo Sanchez. Clutchest hitter in baseball history. My guy. I hope he's up to good things these days because he's all grown up now. That man was 8 years old in 1995. Matt Green, we can find you on Twitter at @Matt_W_Green. And I will talk to you next week.
Yes, sir.
All right, that'll do it for part three and the conclusion of the Thursday, May 26, 2022 edition here on the Chase Owens Podcast. Hope you guys enjoyed Matt and I's conversation on all things college football. To wrap up here on the Chase Owens Podcast, if you enjoyed our show and you've not already done so, make sure you subscribe on your preferred podcast player. But if you're already subscribed and you're an Apple Podcast or Spotify listener, make sure that you leave this show a 5-star rating and a review. It helps other people find the show and it helps this show continue to grow. Tweet at me at @Chase_Thomas, like the Facebook page at facebook.com/ChaseThomasWriter, and email the very program at ChaseThomasPodcast@gmail.com. New episode coming tomorrow. I think we'll have a two-parter on tomorrow's show, but yeah, a lot more content coming your way this week. Look out for that on the Chase Thomas Podcast here at the Blue Wire Pod Network. Thank you as always. You guys have yourself a great rest of your Thursday afternoon. Uncle Derek, how'd I do?
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market. Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television, from Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.